ShareCare, helping you find experts, the top minds in health and medicine. It's ShareCare Radio with Dr. Daria Long-Gillespie on RadioMD.com.
Hi, welcome to ShareCare Radio. I'm Dr. Daria. Now let's just jump into the health news of the week. Of course, health news of the week wouldn't be anything right now without your latest measles update. And as of late, at least over 130 people in 17 states and Washington, D.C. have been affected with measles virus, according to the CDC in the recent outbreak. Now, there's some steps being taken, and in several states, lawmakers are proposing a removal of the personal belief exemption. Now, remember, that's the one that if somebody has not a medical reason for not getting their vaccine, but they have personal beliefs that they think that the vaccine it could be harmful or they don't want to give it for any variety of reasons. Many states allow that. So a lot of lawmakers in various states are proposing eliminating that so you could only avoid getting the vaccine if you had a true medical indication. Of note, interestingly, Mississippi has some of the strictest vaccine laws in the nation, with 99.7% of kindergartners fully vaccinated. Now, they don't allow for either religious or personal belief exemptions, and they only allow very rare medical exemptions. So as a result, we're not seeing measles outbreak cases in Mississippi. But I want to talk about another vulnerable group, and that is teachers. Now, there's no federal law dictating what vaccines teachers and school staff workers have to get. And there's many states have no immunization records on file for their employees. So, again, there's some steps being taken with some lawmakers proposing that they require that teachers have their immunization records known. And it's really become important because for measles, we know that there are a certain group of people who may not have gotten the most effective version of the vaccine, and they are vulnerable to getting infected with the measles. And that is anyone born between 1957 to 1977. So again, a lot of those could be our teachers, and they could be susceptible to catching the measles. So remember, if you got your vaccine between 1963 and 1968, there is a chance that you got the less effective version of the vaccine that was drawn off the market. And so it's really important if you did that to talk to your doctor and see what kind of vaccine you got, and if it's important, if you need to get a secondary booster of that vaccine. So remember, adults are being recognized as a vulnerable group, and 59% of the confirmed measles cases have been in people older than 20 years, most of them without any records of their immunizations for these reasons. So check with your doctor. If you're born in that age group, try to find your records for your immunizations, and if in doubt, get a booster of the measles vaccine. There's really not any harm, according to the CDC, to getting an extra one, even if you did receive it. So talk to your doctor about that. Moving on from measles is onto another virus, and that's Ebola, and battling Ebola with wearable technology and other devices. So the U.S. Agency for International Development has this new challenge called Fighting Ebola, a Grand Challenge for Development, and they've selected some projects to receive funding. It was an initiative launched last October to find new solutions to respond to the current Ebola outbreak, as well as, you know, future disease threats that we don't even know about yet. And there were more than 1,500 ideas. It's a $5 million initial program grant between that USAID, the White House Office of Science and Technology, the CDC, and the Department of Defense. Now, remember, the number of Ebola cases has continued to climb to more than 22,000 as of February 8th, according to the World Health Organization, and over 9,000 deaths. So despite the recent uptick in the number of newly infected cases, they think that the transmission is slowing, which means that we can really have some opportunities to test how well some of these solutions work. So what are some examples? Some examples include a wearable sensor to monitor vital signs of Ebola patients, and even some kind of easy to assemble chambers to decontaminate health workers and equipment in less than 3 minutes, which is a really big deal because with traditional methods, it takes a long time to decontaminate anybody who's been exposed to the virus. And another study that recently came out about sudden infant death syndrome and smoking and other risk factors. Now, the Public Health Department of Wales reported that smoking had been singled out as a particular risk of sudden unexplained infant death. There were some other factors, and that included sleep position. So, for instance, we want babies to be sleeping on their back, co-sleeping, as in sleeping in the same bed with adults. And as I mentioned, pre- and postnatal smoking and low birth weight. You know, the rates of smoking among parents were still found to be alarmingly high, even given what we know about smoking. And so while they've made some great strides in reducing the unexplained sudden infant death in Wales, you know, they know that we have these risk factors that are still high, and that means that there's still a lot of room for intervention. They also really emphasized co-sleeping as a risk factor, since the proportion of babies were co-sleeping with the parent at the time of death. So, of course, the study wants to emphasize that the parents aren't to blame. We still don't know why some children have sudden infant death, but they do know that smoking, co-sleeping, sleep position, all can be contributing factors and things to be most researched and to try for all parents to try to avoid and minimize. Now, onto a really neat story of kind of a medical miracle. And I know for myself and many doctors, these kind of stories of life-saving conditions were and treatment were why we went into medicine in the first place. So this one is of a woman named Patricia Parrish. She was 41, is 41, and was 24 weeks pregnant with her fourth child when she was discovered to have a potentially fatal condition known as placenta accreta. Now, in placenta accreta, the blood vessels from the placenta grow too deeply into the muscles of the uterus and even can spread to other organs. So instead of just being localized where they're supposed to stay within the uterus, they grow into the uterus wall and they grow out of it into other organs. So you can imagine can be very dangerous for bleeding. So doctors were doing regular ultrasounds on her when they found this. Her case was made even more challenging because she has a blood disorder taking blood thinners, also making herself more likely to bleed even in a normal delivery. So she went to the Loyola University Medical Center, where she found a doctor, Dr. Paula Malone, who specializes in high-risk pregnancies and patients with these kind of complications. And, you know, placenta accreta is rare, but it can be extremely dangerous and truly life-threatening to both mom and baby. So it must be diagnosed before labor. And also, it often causes no symptoms until late in the third trimester. So unless you have diagnosed this through some routine ultrasounds, there's no way to know. So it's very dangerous. You have to start taking care of these patients before they go into labor, like they did for this patient. Took her into a C-section about a month before she was due. That way, they could avoid any risk of her going into labor. And had a great big multidisciplinary team of the OBGYNs and the pediatricians all working together. And it's really one of the beautiful things about medicine and medicine in the United States today, that we have that capacity. So 1 month before her due date, she had that scheduled C-section. She delivered a healthy 8-pound, 6-ounce baby, and both mom and baby are doing great. So really exciting news, you know, the kind of medicine that we all love to hear and kind of stories that we all love to hear about. So really exciting to hear about that. Another story on breastfeeding, and that is another kind of hidden benefit of breastfeeding is surprising, is that it could actually help prepare the baby's belly for solid foods. Researchers found that a baby's diet during the first few months of life had a profound influence on the makeup of the bacteria in their intestines. Now, we all have bacteria in our intestines, and what we eat and our environment around us really dictates what's in that. So that these factors influence a baby's ability to transition from milk to solid foods and may have long-term health effects. So it was found to be more challenging to transition to solids for babies that were not exclusively breastfed, and they may have more stomach aches and more colic, and it was found to be due to the role of growth of the gut microbes, that healthy bacteria that are in our intestines and potentially play a role in obesity, allergies, gastrointestinal problems, even irritable bowel syndrome. So it really plays into the growing awareness of the microbes in our gut and the role that they play in our health and helping us do more than just digest food, but help fight off pathogens and our other health. And again, the World Health Organization and others, American Academy of Pediatrics, that's why they encourage people to exclusively breastfeed for the first 6 months and longer if they can. So again, even more evidence for doing that. One last study, and that is on meditation. I don't know if you're like me. I know I need to be meditating because I see so many benefits for it. So maybe this is going to get me to start. And that was that meditation might slow the age-related loss of gray matter in the brain. So that's a portion of the material in your brain. So since 1970, the life expectancy around the world has risen dramatically, with people are living 10 years or more longer. But starting when people are in their mid-20s, the brain begins to wither, its volume and weight begins to decrease, and they're finding that meditation may actually help to reverse that. So get started, even if it's for a couple minutes a day. And there you have it, the top health news you need to know for the week. I'm Dr. Daria, and you're listening to Share Care Radio on Radio MD. Thanks for tuning in, and stay well.